It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running to finish the week. It is the 16th day of October 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where we tuck away the madcap multimedia wacky zany real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. You're welcome to jump in and participate. If you run over there, you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. And more will be wandering along as the show progresses, I have no doubt. Of course, also at the HeadOn.live, your easy as can be access to as many podcasting platforms as we can, as Brother Deacon Asa can find. And right there on the main page, the interface for helping to keep the program on the air. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so as a consequence, that means thanks are going out this afternoon to our 16th day of the month subscribers. Thanks very kindly to Timothy. And the 16th of the month is a 2 Timothy day. So thanks to Timothy and Timothy. And thanks to Brock. And thanks to Reinhardt over on the Virginia coast. Thank you very kindly. Thanks for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep the program on the air. If you'd like to be a partial sponsor, a subscriber, well, gosh, it's very easy to do. Just check off the little box there on the form that says "Make this recurring." And for $10, a $10 a month subscription will set you back not quite a half a stick of chewing gum per day. By Grapthar's Hammer. What a savings. Yes. Otherwise, the fundraising goal for today is to finish the week is at $355. And thanks very kindly going out to Cecilia. Cecilia just took us down to 330. So $330 to go to finish the week. Thank you, Cecilia. Thank you very, very kindly. Hopefully we will finish things out, and I realized, among other things, that the Horn's anniversary will actually fall on a Saturday this year, so we'll actually celebrate our 15th anniversary as an online-only platform on Friday on the Front Porch a week from this afternoon. So surely to goodness, somewhere along the way, we've had a Friday on the Front Porch anniversary program, but this will be a special one, being 15 years and a grand total of somewhere around 18 or more in total. But that's next Friday. And hopefully we'll have a merry time of it, marking that very special day. Let me make sure. Okay, good. Bob, to get us started. Adult function. As to the conversation last night on the horn relative to Coney Barrett dragging her children to her hearings, yes, the children were being used as props to lend the appearance of a family full of compassionate conservatism. Dear God, I'd almost forgotten that noxious phrase. And yes, the Barretts are a poster child for Republicans to convey the image that assists them in achieving their Machiavellian motives to abolish abortion because, of course, you too can adopt a child or two or three of any race, creed, or color, even though you may only earn $20,000 or less annually, as now does 46% of the country. And add into that, they probably paid a heck of a lot more than $20,000 for each of their kids. Because in many instances, that's exactly what the religious adoption racket is. Baby selling. Pure and simple. Boss Man Wayne and I were talking about that, and he said, oh, hell, they bought them kids. Yep. Literally half of the country, Joey says, now cannot afford to have children because they do not have a living wage job thanks to 40 years of Reaganomics. Finances are the biggest reason women decide to terminate a pregnancy. So, Republicans, if you're so worried about babies being born, and they're not really, then provide living wage employment. Oh, surely you jest. Yes, he'd know, and he don't call him Shirley. Don't even call Giraffe Shirley. Provide living wage employment with a minimum wage of at least $15 an hour, and then we can have the conversation about all children's lives matter. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says, the hearings are an adult function. However, I was not so disturbed by the children seated behind Coney Barrett, but rather it was the children seated in front of her that really bothered me, i.e. Lindsey Graham Cracker, John Little Abner Kennedy, and John Cornyn Copian. Great point, Giraffe. Yes, at one point the questioning from John Kennedy devolved into, Your Honor, do you like warm puppy dogs? I find it terrible that John Kennedy of Louisiana was named after a great president. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says, One of the maggots wants to know which president John Kennedy of Louisiana was named after. Really? Jeffrey, are these fucking maggots that stupid? Yes, the current senator of Louisiana should not be named after a good president, but rather a bad one like Andrew Johnson. Because little Abner Johnny sounds like a big dick to me. So the Republicans still want to abolish abortion, let's abolish the Republicans on November 3rd. Speaking of abortion and a wacko woman like Coney Barrett, on this day in 1916, Margaret Sanger opened up the first birth control clinic in Brooklyn, New York, but yet she later advocated for eugenics. I guess you could say Sanger had no cluegenics. And speaking of abolition, on this day in 1859, a great man who was raised in Hudson, Ohio, just northeast of Akron, John Brown, attempted to begin the process of abolishing slavery as he led a raid at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, now Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, thank you, fully intending to start a slave liberation movement that would hopefully spread through the South. In so doing, Brown seized weapons from a local armory, intending to arm about 20 slaves to assist in this insurrection, but the plot was foiled, and Brown was tried for treason and summarily executed. And just as a historical footnote to that, he was tried for treason against the state of Virginia. And a future traitor by the name of Bobby Lee presided over John Brown's execution. It was impossible for John Brown to commit treason against Virginia because he was not a Virginian. So there's that. However, historians agree that the Harper's Ferry raid and Brown's trial, Virginia versus John Brown, which was covered in great detail by the national press, including Harper's and Vanity Fair magazines, escalated tensions that led to the South's secession and eventually the Civil War. I think it's safe to say that the actions of John Brown leading to the Civil War was an instrumental step in ending slavery. What was it that was it Frederick Douglass who said, I could live for my freedom, but John Brown could die for it. John Brown had a lot of respect in the abolition North. Well, in the abolition movement generally, it wasn't limited to the North. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says, I think Silent R, Lamar, Tracy, Lady B, Ron and Raleigh, Shorty in L.A., Todd are definitely down with John Brown. That's right, Giraffe. And so are paler members of this community, like Bob. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday on the front porch, the 16th day of October, with Giraffe plotting a raid on the Republicans this November 3rd. And that means that we will begin the program with a $50 Raid the Republicans challenge, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe. So that would get us down to $230 to go if it's met. Thank you. Thank you, Joey. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Giraffe. Well, you're most welcome, Bob. Yeah. So, that'll get us started very nicely. And thank you very kindly to Jeremy jumping in on that challenge. There's $40 to go on the Raid the Republicans November 3rd challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very much. Steve with a question. Doesn't Giraffe mean John Cornhole? Or as I prefer, John Cornholio? I think Giraffe was trying to come up with a different name just for the sake of creativity. Yeah. That's true. Stockton Larry in the chat room pointing out Virginia ain't no state. The Old Dominion is officially a commonwealth. Although the most of the common don't participate in the wealth. Oh, no. No. Uh-uh. Ain't having none of that. That's communism. Right. Yes. So we're off and running for this beginning of the program. A reminder, Friday on the front porch means that if you'd like to be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable conversation, we'll just run on over to headon.live, and there's a big old button at the top. Click here to join the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. Click it. It'll carry you straight into the old holler tree where we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and gather around it every Friday and some other days as well, where Sparky has held court for, lo, these many years. Mm-hmm. So here we are. There you go. That horrible woman is going to be the replacement for a brilliant woman. ACB replacing RBG. Mm-hmm. Somehow doesn't seem just. Doesn't seem right. But quite often, that's the case in the big, brutal world. Oh, yes. But we'll get the conversation started in about 45 minutes or so. And you can bring to the table whatever it is that you think needs discussing. Silent R. Lamar says, please share with the Horn family. Sorry for yesterday. I was under a little stress and I took two good shots of bourbon. In the last 2 months, I've had a classmate die from COVID-19, and when they asked me to wait during that hour, a good friend, a classmate died. I knew him in the seventh grade through college, and he attended my wedding some 35 years ago. He was the last member of his family in California. I'm still a little down. And understandably so, Silent R. Our thoughts are with you, my friend. They are with you indeed. So, we've got ample opportunities for conversation this evening. I was frankly surprised that Joe Biden's ABC town hall drew better numbers than the complete meltdown on NBC. And maybe we done got outsmarted by the multimillionaire for-profit media. Because it seemed pretty cheesy and grifty and greasy and sleazy for NBC to run out and give Donald Trump an easy forum when he was the one who had backed out of the debate because he wanted to do it in person. and Joe Biden didn't want the Rona. Yeah. But then it turned out that that thing was a that thing was a dumpster fire with 15-year-old garbage in it. It was something for the ages, really it was. Savannah Guthrie moderated it. And she actually gave Nitwit Nero a pretty good working over.
Just this week, you retweeted to your 87 million followers a conspiracy theory that Joe Biden orchestrated to have SEAL Team 6, the Navy SEAL Team 6, killed to cover up the fake death of bin Laden. Now, why would you send a lie like that to your followers? You retweeted
it. That was a retweet. That was an opinion of somebody, and that was a retweet. I'll put it out there. People can decide for themselves. I don't take a position.
You're not like someone's crazy uncle who can just retweet whatever.
That was a retweet. And I do a lot of retweets. And frankly, because the media is so fake and so corrupt, if I didn't have social media, I don't call it Twitter, I call it social media, I wouldn't be able to get the word out. And the word is false. And you know what the word is? The word is very simple. We're building our country stronger and better than it's ever been before.
Yeah, one conspiracy theory at a time, I guess.
I call it social media.
Really? Is that what you call it? You come up with that term by yourself, Donnie? Wow, you super genius, you. Jesus. And all over the country, people watched the dumpster fire with varying degrees of just gobstruck amazement. Tom Nichols, one of those never Trump Republicans, in other words, trust him long enough to get Donald Trump out of there, then don't trust him anymore. Tom Nichols said, the only good thing about these two competing town hall events is that they show how much Biden is held to a different standard as an actual rational human being, while Trump just has to get through an hour without lighting a bucket of mice on fire. The image there, the metaphor, it works, but somehow or another, in my mind, if I've been the one typing it, and I'm not, I don't have a blue check mark or any of that groovy stuff, I would have said something more along the lines of, all Donald Trump has to do is get through an hour without biting the head off a live bat. Because in the era of the Don-demic, that image would have some staying power. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But he, and by the way, Trump, Biden lasted well over an hour. Trump was gone after an hour. NBC, he shows up on NBC from time to time as a commenter. Neil Katyal said, I wasn't pleased about this event, but it turns out that this whole NBC News town hall is proving to be a long commercial for Biden, not Trump. Mm-hmm. One of the funnier remarks. Trump demanding NBC give him his own town hall tonight may go down in history as the worst campaign decision since Mike Dukakis went full acorn helmet with his tank photo. Chelsea Handler said, Trump's decomposing in real time, and I'm on my second edible. That may have been the way to watch it. Yeah. He did not get better ratings than Biden, but got a laugh over on Twitter. Said, if Trump gets better ratings on his town hall, it'll be because more people want to watch a car crash than a guy parallel parking his Prius. True that, too. And along the way, he refused to denounce QAnon and had himself a... Well, he had an on-air live meltdown. And he was apparently either dexamethasoned or just old-fashioned garden variety Adderall buzz. And by the way, thank you to Elizabeth. Elizabeth just got in on challenge, the Raid the Republicans November 3rd challenge. And so, that means that we've got how much left to go on it? $15 left on the challenge. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you very, very kindly. And Shorty in L.A. says, I dedicate this 25th Million Man March anniversary pledge to my brothers. I dedicate this 25th Million Man March anniversary pledge to all of our brothers from another mother. In the words of Agnes, by a sister from another mister. This is the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March. I did not know that until Shorty made me aware. Thanks, Shorty. The subject line, white Christian soldiers. Terrace with a note. Says, the conversation last night about crazed white Christians stealing, reprogramming, and otherwise saving the children of God's heathen enemies should be added to the highlight reel. It was, after all, just a conversation like every other conversation on your program. A conversation that you masterfully kept civil. Well, thank you, Terrace. It was a conversation about an endless war that goes by other names, culture-side, genocide, Holocaust. As I type this, the children of American continents and regions are being transferred from cages in Texas, Arizona, and California to the white Christian Republican families without any paper trail. These kids will speak American English and think in capitalism as long as their adoptive families keep them isolated in white private schools, safe from racists who enforce their form of Christianity in public schools and alleyways after dark. But Christian fundamentalists don't just adopt. They also run foster homes, which are kind of a Christian spider web for at-risk children. I'm not smearing all foster parents or all adopters of African-American or Latino children or all Christians. I shouldn't even have to say this, and neither should you. Circumstances, like your mileage, may vary. I know that Christians, like Muslims, have no magical powers to put the crazies in line. As you've pointed out many times, fundamentalist Christians are supported by foundations controlled by individuals whose faith comes second to wanting it all. And it is all tax-free. Hallelujah. I thank you and everyone who called your show yesterday, Terrace says. The testimony will be lost in the ether, but a few of us heard and appreciated it. The country, indeed the world, needed to hear that conversation in October 2020. I will close this note with a rally cry that might at first sound cringeworthy. But please, hear me out. Save the children. Save their parents who are not surviving capitalism. Save democracy. Vote for Joe. And keep fighting. Keep fighting. Well, like I've said, not all cowbells go to funny things. Sometimes cowbells go to the profound. And that's one of those moments. Thank you, Ralphs. Joey and Giraffe's Raid the Republicans on November 3rd challenge has been met. That's awesome. So now we're down to 230 to finish the week. $30 away from finishing yesterday and $200 away from finishing today. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. The town hall viewing, Lee in New York says, of course Biden did better. American TV is saturated with reality TV. The fake White House with the orange body had low ratings. There's a jingle involved with that. As to Nitwit Nero's declaration, we're building our country. Yeah, how's that working out, James in Illinois asks. Not like just any other financial fiasco. This one caused real damage for a lot of people and the end of the line for literally hundreds of thousands of Americans. It's shaping up to be a genuine facsimile to a second civil war. Cheers! We got one chance to put it to rights. And we're 18 days away from the end of that chance. Sister Carol Baker pointed out something on social media yesterday.
I call it social media.
She said November 3rd should not be referred to as Election Day. November 3rd should be referred to as the end of the election. And I think she's right. The Los Angeles Times reported in the last day or so that more Californians are voting early than have ever done so before. And the numbers are through the roof in other states as well. You may recall, I guess he's now former Food Network megastar, Alton Brown. The reruns of his Good Eats programs from back at the beginning of the turn of the century and onward are still really, really handy if you're into cooking. Because he goes in, back then he was going into detail of why things did things the way they did, and some really, really handy tips. One episode on doing a standing rib roast inside a terracotta planter in the oven was pure brilliance. And there used to be, I haven't looked in a long, long time, there used to be a site where someone, just a fan, was transcribing every program and putting it up so that you could actually read without having to go and watch the video. And that was really handy. But anyway, Alton Brown, who lives in the greater Atlanta area, tweeted a couple of mornings, yesterday morning, 7 a.m., going to vote, already 100 people outside the polling place, waiting. That says something. And maybe after 2 years, or plus 2 years, of knowing exactly what Brian Kemp did when he was Secretary of State, and what he continues to do as the illegitimate governor of Georgia, maybe Georgians are getting fed up. It's a lot to hope for, but if John Ossoff can knock off whichever Purdue it is, and Purdue's in, allegedly in trouble, and if Reverend Raphael Warnock can make it into the runoff for the other Georgia Senate seat, that could be tremendous. I mean, that really would be earthquake-level shock to see two seats go Democrat in the blood-red state of Georgia. Because I don't think any southern state is experiencing a more massive demographic shift than what Georgia is and has been for the last several years. Eventually, and I may not be able to get past or get over and I'm not being mean, and I'm not critiquing the community or anything. But we do, you know, it's really easy to just look at the South and hate it, especially if you've never had any experience with it, and in some cases, especially if you have. Because the South is defined by its blood-soaked nature that has been there from jump. But the South is changing. And the South is changing faster than just about any other part of the country. And it's changing for the better. Because the more diversity that the South builds, whether it wants to or not, the more likely it is that it will eventually be a decent and just and fair place. I mean, God, I love Atlanta. I do. And, over the last couple of years, it was so nice to get down there again for the first time in a very long time to see how much change has been wrought. God, Atlanta's boomed in the last 30 years. But it's been booming ever since the Union Army did it the favor of burning it to the ground. So that's a big deal. And the lines to vote and the a few days ago, the story was 14 million votes have already been cast. And that's tremendous. And hopefully it means that there is a blue tsunami that is about to wash across the country and cleanse the White House of the putrescence of that filthy family that has occupied it for, well, since January 20th, 2017. That we can wash the old fossils out of the Senate like Lindsey Graham. Sadly, it doesn't look like we'll be washing Mitch McConnell out. It could still happen, but it doesn't look like it. Yeah, Lee in New York pointing out it's David Perdue versus John Ossoff. I knew it was a Perdue. There was Sonny, too, for me. But David Perdue versus John Ossoff. We could have had a really good progressive African-American nominee, but Amy McGrath had enough money to get in and be the Democratic nominee. And her debate performance was okay. But that debate became known for the fact that Confederate Voldemort just sat there while she was talking about the Senate going on vacation while people died. And Chinless Mitch. And it remains to be seen whether whether the Senate or whether the people of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, yeah, it's another one of those. Will bounce his ass. And I'm trying to find the comment. Oh, and this, from Reverbo, the human man. Wash out that fucking Reagan. Let's reset it to we're your government and we're here to help you.
Yeah, well, the nine most dangerous words in the English language are I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And it's been downhill ever since. Oh, and by the way, I had occasion to stop by the Horn post office box today, so I need to send out thanks to Brandon and Fennell. And thank you to Dave and the boys down at the shop there at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium. Thank you very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Oh, let's see. Where is it? It's got to be here somewhere. I had, and it may have, I think it was Dave number 11 who sent it to me. An analysis of exactly why Kentucky's going to be fucked up. There are actually more Democratic registrants in Kentucky than there are Republicans. And people may be crossing over from Democrat to Republican to vote for that shitbird McConnell. Ugh. I know. Steve in New York tells me, apparently Democrats outnumber Republicans 2.4 to 1 in early voting. It's up to 21 million votes cast now. That means 14.8 million Democrats versus 6.2 million Republicans. Ah, okay, good. I can go and find it. I wanted to find Dave's comment on this because it makes so damn much sense. There. Registered voters in Kentucky as of 10-16-20, the 16th of October, 2020. Democrats, 1,672,380. Republicans, 1,568,690. And the DNC torpedoed the electable candidate Charles Booker in favor of the first female pilot to fly 85 attack missions in an F-A-18 Hornet during peacetime. Kentucky hasn't elected a blue senator since 1992 and has the worst human ever to set foot on American soil in Addison Moscow Mitch McConnell as the oh-so-vulnerable incumbent. Yet Amy McGrath has found a way to lose. Dems are crossing over to keep McGrath from representing Kentucky. Democrats are so stupid. With a photograph of should-have-been Senator Charles Booker. Well, that's nothing new for Kentucky, Dave. You got to remember back the last time that they sent a different woman out to challenge him, and she ran around Kentucky playing Republican light. And for all I know, that may be some of what Amy McGrath is doing, too, because, you know, you can't run as a true progressive in Kentucky and win. That's the conventional wisdom. But the last time, 6 years ago, and I remember talking about it in real time, people will vote for a real Republican over an imitation one. People will vote for real genuine Republican over Republican light every chance they get. So, I still hold out hope, but hope is a very thin reed to cling to in situations such as this. But still, putting him in the minority will go a long way. And of course, you know, if we get Biden and if we get a Supreme Court, Supreme Court vacancy, Chinless Mitch will be standing there saying, oh, we have got to return to our way, our traditions of making sure that every Supreme Court justice has a supermajority. Well, he's already torpedoed that. And I do hope, although, again, there's that thin reed. Harry Reid? No, Chuck Schumer. It would be nice if Chuck Schumer would be willing to do to Mitch McConnell what Mitch McConnell has done to him. It would be lovely to see Senate Democrats holding a majority in the Senate say, hey, our turn now. It's time for y'all to sit down and shut the fuck up. We are going to give you every bit the respect that y'all gave us. Bye now. Just how bad is Amy McGrath? Steve in New York says, this bad. Headline, a Democrat tries to take down McConnell by accusing him of getting in Trump's way. What? This from CNBC. Former fighter pilot Amy McGrath is aiming to take down powerful Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell by accusing him of obstructing key parts of Trump's Drain the Swamp agenda. Oh, that sounds like a winner. Kentuckians voted for Donald Trump because they wanted to drain the swamp and lower prescription drug prices, the Kentucky Democrat told the New York Times on July 9th. A lot of what has stood in the way of what Donald Trump promised is Senator McConnell. Yeah, well, that's going to be... I'll be a while getting my head around that, how that works. But then again, it's Kentucky. Maybe she was trying to play on the idea that somehow Kentucky loved Trump more than McConnell, and I think that's probably true because he has the lowest in-state approval rating of just about any senator in that body. Still, it ain't promising. Oh, no. From David in South Carolina, I'll always open an email with this subject line. BBQ, food talk reminded me of this. Remember when Bourdain came to Charleston and then took a side trip to Scott's Barbecue in Hemingway? Well, Jamie has Scott's in the background of one of his new TV ads. I'd like to point out that the production quality is superb in Jamie Harrison's ads. Well, and they're quick, too. I think it's probably a better team than what Amy McGrath has. Because the words, good old days of segregation, were barely out of Precious Lindsay's mouth before that, Jamie was all over the place saying, he said what? Causing Lindsay, in turn, to violate the turd blossom rule when you're explaining you're losing. God, I want to try some. Scott's Barbecue. I got it. It's not that far to South Carolina. If this goddamn Don Demick ever fucking ends, what a lost year this has been, and it didn't have to be. And this from our pal, Joy in Ann Arbor. I had no idea that this day was so auspicious. The 16th day of October. But on this day in 1973, saw the first mention of Donald Trump's name in the New York Times. And not only was it the first mention of his name, it was on the front page of the Times. Headline, major landlord accused of anti-black bias in city. The Department of Justice, charging discrimination against blacks in apartment rentals, brought suit in federal court in Brooklyn yesterday against the Trump Management Corporation, a major owner and manager of real estate here. The corporation, which owns and rents more than 14,000 apartments in Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island, was accused of violating the Fair Housing Act of 1968 in its operation of 39 buildings. Most are in Coney Island, Brooklyn, and in Jamaica Estates and Forest Hills, Queens. Seeking an injunction to halt alleged discriminatory practices, the government contended that Trump management had refused to rent or negotiate rentals because of race and color. It also charged that the company had required different rental terms and conditions because of race and that it had misrepresented to blacks that apartments were not available. At the corporation's main office, 600 Avenue Z in Brooklyn, Donald Trump, president, denied the charges.
They're absolutely ridiculous. We never have discriminated, and we never would. There have been a number of local actions against us, and we've won them all. We were charged with discrimination, and we proved in court that we did not discriminate.
Mr. Trump and his father, Fred C. Trump, the C really did stand for Christ, the principal stockholder and corporate board of chairman, were also named as defendants. They're required to respond to the complaint within 20 days. The Trump family's been in the real estate business for more than 40 years. Even more than that, if you count Grandpa Trump's bordellos. In Washington, J. Stanley Pottinger, Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, termed the suit the second major rental discrimination action begun by the department in the last 2 years. Well, how about that, sports fans? And what's even weirder? This is after the re-election, the landslide re-election of Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon. The pinhead was appended by Harry Truman, let's recall. And that suit was brought by a Republican administration with a Republican attorney general in defense of a civil rights law. And in enforcement of that self-same law, Fair Housing Act of 1968. Just try, I dare you, just try to imagine that happening today. And the after effect of that, there are further reverberations. And thank you, Joy, for bringing that to my attention. The after effect of that is that all they had to do was enter into a consent agreement saying we don't admit liability, we don't admit guilt, but we promise we will never, ever, ever engage in racially biased rental practices ever, ever again. We swear and promise. That's all they had to do. It would have been over. But even that far back, he was an ignorant dickhead. Future nitwit Nero was. And so he said,
we're going to fight it in court.
And so he goes out and hires who? Yeah, you know, Roy Cohn. The guy who said, no, I'm not gay. I just like to have sex with men. Well, okay. And who of course, had a noxious career as the consigliere to Senator McCarthy, Joe McCarthy, and had ruined countless lives with allegations of communist sympathies. I was watching, Columbo is available. All the Columbos are available on Prime right now. I don't know for how much longer, but Agnes and I have been watching one every now and then because, God, Peter Falk was good. And the first two Columbos were made for TV movies. And the second one was called Ransom for a Dead Man. And the guest star villain was Academy Award winner Lee Grant. She had not won her Academy Award yet. She would win it for Shampoo, Best Supporting Actress. But she'd previously been nominated, had a Broadway career, but she was sidelined. Her career was tanked, torpedoed, and idled for 12 years over the McCarthy witch hunt. Yeah. And so she and Peter Falk had worked together previously. And it's cheesy and it's early 70s. And I noticed one weird little thing, life imitating art and sometimes not in a good way. And it's not a spoiler because there's no such thing as a spoiler with a Columbo episode because you know at the beginning who done it. And then the fun is in watching Columbo figure it out. Well, Lee Grant done it. But the setup was that she shot her husband in the head with a .22 caliber pistol. That's the how. And the episode aired in March of 1971. And a little over 3 months later, a different woman, a young woman, would do the same thing to my brother. Shoot him in the head with a .22 caliber pistol. We were watching, and I was just looking up the details, and I saw March 1971, as he was saying, shot in the head, .22 caliber pistol, so that the bullet wouldn't pass through the body. And I went, damn, that was weird. And it was. But, yeah, Joe McCarthy and Roy Cohn, and they spent a fortune. The Trumps spent a fortune hiring Roy Cohn and trying to litigate the damn thing, and then just lost their asses and wound up in the same place they would have been if they had just signed the consent decree. So his stupidity and his pig-headedness go a long, long way back. Oh, and Arnold in PA reminds us, Commander Queef is having a rally in Florida tonight, which in turn reminds me of a story that I wanted to bring up this evening, just as a study in how, for instance, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda treats a story. So when he went to Minnesota, COVID Caligula started another super spreader. And an outdoor Trump event at an airport in Bemidji, Minnesota, yielded up 16 cases of coronavirus. That was a month ago, September 18th. And then in Duluth, three more cases of coronavirus at a Trump event there on September 30th. And then a Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport event featuring Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek on September 24th generated three more cases. So that's three and three is six and 16. That's 22 cases. Now, to be fair, two cases were linked to events for Joe Biden. There was a case that emerged at a Duluth event on September 16th, and then at Brooklyn Park in the greater Minneapolis-St. Paul area, another case on September 22nd. Interestingly, though, although Fox News TV Radio Rwanda reports that that one of those cases came from a Brooklyn Park event, the Biden campaign said, we didn't have an event in Brooklyn Park on September 22nd? Right. Well, now consider how Fox News TV Radio Rwanda reported the headline, and the reporter Dom Calicchio, 2 days ago, Minnesota coronavirus cases traced to Trump-Biden campaign events, reports, when actually it's 22 cases linked to Trump super spreader events, maybe one to Biden event. But Emery and Marvelline will never read down far enough to find out that two tops, more like one for the Biden event, and 16, or 22 rather, for Trump events. No. Dishonest motherfuckers. Oh well, they are who they are, right? Todd in South Carolina stands says, damn it, careful how you talk about my Columbo. So many great B actors. Lee Grant was no B actor. Again, she would go on to win an Academy Award, nominated for a couple of more. And she's still alive. Up in her 90s. So, no disrespect intended. Let's see here. Now I'm waiting to connect with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group. And before we go to the group there, there's one more little piece of information that's worth sharing. You know, I give a hard time, and I think God knows he deserves it. I give a hard time to that new and different kind of Republican, Ben Sasse of Nebraska. Because, see, he was supposed to be all special and shit. He wasn't just another maggot. Oh, that's great. That's true. That's true. That episode I was talking about, the second episode, Ransom for a Dead Man of Columbo, Jude reminds me, that was the first directing gig that a 24-year-old kid named Steven Spielberg ever got. And Jude says she has an especial connection to watching it. She was gifted with the full series, and she said, it's like being with one of my brothers I no longer have. Aww. But yeah, thanks, Jude. That is kind of neat. That episode with Lee Grant was directed by Steven Spielberg. Whatever happened to him? Right. Thank you, Brian. Brian just jumped in to help out getting us to the end of the week. We are now down to 205. 205 to get finished. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very kindly. James in Illinois, subject line, Kentucky Democrats. I've never seen Democrats like those in Kentucky who would apologize for Ted Kennedy and the Clintons. I'm no environist. No, really. Well, you haven't met West Virginia Democrats then. Because there's plenty of that here, too. Jimmy says Kentucky colonels should grow some balls and vote Mumbling Mitch out. Your mouth to God's ear, Jimmy. Your mouth to God's ear. Also, you know, there's a sleazy Trump super spreader event this evening, but also at 8 o'clock in Fort Lauderdale, hashtag walk away presents the LGBT throwdown, in which, members of the LGBTQIA community will gather to both declare that they're walking away and they want no part of Donald Trump, or just listen to their own words. The Walk Away campaign, with over 1 million followers via social media, is dedicated to bring, I wonder how many of those are Russian bots, is dedicated to bringing Americans together to walk away from intolerance and social societal discord, to leave identity politics behind. That means gay people are supposed to stop hollering for rights for gay people. And to walk towards unity, civility, respect, and the American ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all. Yeah, walk away. That's right up there with Blexit. Again, AstroTurf as fuck. Bill in PA says, Republican versus Republican light. I'm so old that I remember when people would vote for a real Democrat over a Democrat light. Well, that question is on the ballot in Georgia. It'll be interesting to see how many Georgians are willing to go all the way down to the bottom of the ballot to finally find the name of Raphael Warnock and cast a vote for him instead of maybe, if you're a Democrat, voting for Matt Lieberman, Joe's boy. The guy with the imaginary black friend that he wrote a book about. Yeah, that Matt Lieberman. But like I said, I've been giving hell to Ben Sasse for a while. And man, he outed himself. The Washington Examiner got hold of a recording of Ben Sasse having a private call with his constituents back in Nebraska-stan. And it doesn't look good for Ben Sasse at all. See, he had a primary challenge from a wackadoodle maggot, and he got past that by sticking his head so far up Trump's ass that you could see Ben's smiling face whenever Trump yawned. And then, having survived the maggot challenge, now he's trying to reach out to the normal Nebraskans. Normal. Flavio, by the way, lets us know that Trump's coming to Janesville, Wisconsin this tomorrow. Our state's burning up. ICUs are filling up. Field hospitals are being set up. But he's going to bring a super spreader event to Janesville.
It's because he's a psychopath.
Not that's a surprise. Yeah, I caught that one on the fly, Jimmy. So the phone call audio, well now, that's something special. Let me see what I can, because I'm going to have to bring it in on the other channel. There it is. Good. So we don't know how they got hold of the audio, but it's damn fine that they did. Because what you find out of all of this, and it goes on for 9 minutes or so, Ben Sasse has all of the convictions and moral courage and ethical center of a slime mold.
I think, like a lot of Nebraskans, I'm trying to understand your relationship with the president. Why do you have to criticize him so much?
Sure. So that is a very fair question. I guess I kind of think about it like this. I think we should distinguish between policy agreement and policy disagreement, and then also long-term political implications as well. So I've worked hard to develop a good working relationship with the president over the last 3.5 years. I obviously campaigned for a lot of other people in the 2016 cycle, but Donald Trump is our president now, so I've worked hard to develop a good relationship with him. He's got a hard job, and we're called to pray for our leaders, so that's what we do regularly at the breakfast table at our house, is we pray for the president and the First Lady and for Vice President Pence.
Wonder how many times there at the family breakfast table they prayed for Barack and Michelle and Sasha and Aaliyah. Can mathematics measure a number that low? Well, yeah, sure. Thanks to the Mayans, we have zero. Right.
In their callings. And there are obviously a number of issue areas where President Trump and I have policy alignment now, or maybe a better way to put it is where the president has now adopted traditionally Republican positions that he used to reject for the majority of his life when he was funding Democratic candidates. So, for example...
Oh, there it is. He's secretly a Democrat.
Was mentioning to the last questioner... is I think he's nominated truly great judges, and I've worked with him on that. In fact, I went on the Judiciary Committee after he was elected explicitly to advocate for the kind of originalists and constitutionalists that he had put on his list and that he had agreed to nominate. I'm the first Nebraskan on the Judiciary Committee in, I think, 46 years. I'm 48 years old, and I'm the first Nebraskan on the committee since the mid-70s. So there are definitely places where we agree. But, as your question says, there are obviously a lot of places where he and I differ as well. And these aren't just mere policy issues. You know, I'm not at all apologetic.
Dancing for all he's worth, isn't he?
Against his in places where I think his are deficient, not just for a Republican, but for an American. So the way he kisses dictators' butts, I mean, the way he ignores that the Uyghurs are in literal concentration camps in Xinjiang right now. He hasn't lifted a finger on behalf of the Hong Kongers. I mean, he and I have a very different foreign policy. It isn't just that he fails to lead our allies. It's that the United States now regularly sells out our allies under his leadership. The way he treats women and spends like a drunken sailor, the ways I criticize President Obama for that kind of spending, I've criticized President Trump for as well. He mocks evangelicals behind closed doors. His family has treated the presidency like a business opportunity. He's flirted with white supremacists. I mean, that...
Yeah, there's the line. He's flirted with white supremacists. One, like I said, we now know that if we ever had any suspicion to the contrary, Ben Sasse has no morals whatsoever. He will do anything to advance his own vision of political, of the exercise of raw, naked, blunt force political power. But that line, he has flirted with white supremacists. That makes it seem as though flirted. So one presumes that Ben could, like, walk into the house one day, and there's Mrs. Sasse with the milkman. I don't guess they're a milkman anymore, but the mail carrier, the newspaper boy, the UPS guy, the FedEx guy, the plumber, the HVAC guy, and they're all having a real good time at the same time. And Ben Sasse looks at Mrs. Sasse and says, "Honey, why are you flirting with these men?" Donald Trump hasn't flirted with white supremacists. He's involved in a deep, long-lasting, abiding, intimate relationship with them. And the most Ben Sasse can say is, "Well, you know, he's flirted with them." But I don't guess Nebraska is very good anymore at producing Democrats. The last one that they had was a Dino, who Ben Nelson, who in 2009 helped to scuttle the Employee Free Choice Act in the Senate of the United States. And of course, Harry Reid let him. But it's a hell of a piece of audio. It really, really is. And if you ever thought there was anything even remotely respectable about Ben Sasse, the new and different kind of Republican from Nebraska, hopefully you are thoroughly disabused of that now. He went on to explain his political fears. If young people become permanent Democrats because they've just been repulsed by the obsessive nature of our politics, or if women who are willing to still vote with the Republican Party in 2016 decide that they need to turn away from this party permanently in the future, they don't really want more rage tweeting as a new form of entitlement. Well, we'll be done. And the country will move further to the left. Oh, but don't worry, Ben Sasse. The country, the entire country could be so far to the left that we sing the Internationale over our fucking post toasties every morning. But Nebraska will still be blood red. Because Nebraska will always just be that fucked up. Remember, Ben Sasse as a senator probably represents something like 0.01% of the number of people that, say, the senators from California represent. Because the Senate is the single most anti-democratic institution outside the Supreme Court, which at least requires majority votes, that this country has to offer. Yeah, so, you know, there's that. Sheesh. But I wanted to make sure that we got to that this evening. Uyghurs? Steve in New York says he's not said anything about the Uyghurs in concentration camps. He fucking encouraged it. Well, there's that too, Steve. Yeah. Clarence in South Carolina, on the issue of Moscow Mitch and getting shed of him. Clarence in South Carolina says the problem with Mitch's removal lies in Louisville and Lexington. If the brothers and sisters in those two cities show up and vote, Mitch is done. The Democrats have the majority, but the shortfall is always in those locations. Very low turnout. Well, I wonder why that is. But maybe, just maybe, what's been going on in Kentucky may inspire people. One can hope. I'm pretty sure that a lot more people would have been inspired had Charles Booker been the nominee, but yeah, never mind. And Kenneth Walker, the young man who was Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, gave an interview. Speaking to CBS this morning's Gail King, Mr. Walker said, to the world, she's just a hashtag, a picture, and all of that. But to me, it was much more, than a girlfriend, too. I think that's what I want the world to know the most. That was my best friend, the most important person pretty much to me on Earth, and they took her away from me, he said, speaking of Breonna Taylor. Neither of them have criminal histories. When the cops broke down the doors and murdered Breonna Taylor, there were no drugs found in the apartment. No. And Kenneth Walker went on to go step by step, almost minute by minute, through the day that the police murdered Breonna Taylor. When the gunfire stopped, Walker said Breonna Taylor was still alive. She was bleeding. And he called his mama. I told her somebody just kicked in the door and shot Breonna, and she's freaking out at this point. But he meant his mama. But she told me to call 911, so I did. And you can hear Kenneth Walker saying, somebody kicked in the door and shot Breonna. Noting that, you know, if he had known the police broke in the door, he wouldn't have called 911 for assistance from the police! And then by the time it was all over, the cops roughed him and cuffed him, dragged him down the street barefoot to the squad car on gravel, rocks, and everything. Kenneth Taylor says he still has scabs on his feet from it. A different cop comes along and says, you know, there's been a miscommunication. Is there anything you need? They got him to the station. They took the cuffs off. Kenneth Walker told Gail King, you know, you don't allegedly shoot a police officer and they take the handcuffs off. He only found out that his beloved was dead once he was behind bars and saw TV coverage. And then, of course, there's the cop who looked at Kenneth Walker and said, you know, it's unfortunate you weren't shot, too. So maybe, that suppressed voter turnout won't be quite so suppressed, Clarence. I hope. I can only hope. Suman pointing out Ben Sasse, BS. His initials speak for themselves. I used to be afraid of Tom Cotton. Now I'm afraid more about this guy. And the Uyghurs are just a talking point for him. Please remember, there are still kids in cages and BS never said a damn word about them. Of course not. That's one of those places where he and Trump's policies align. I hate these fuckers, says Steve in New York. Gee, I wonder what Ms. Originalist will say in regard to a story. Supreme Court to consider Trump's effort not to count undocumented immigrants for congressional seats. Oh, I don't think we have to wonder now, do we, Steve? No, hell no. And so Megan says, Ben Sasse, this dude sounds like a neo-maxi Zoom dweeby. Please tell me this man isn't setting himself for a future presidential run. He is only 46 years old, Megan. That is exactly what he dreams of. Hell yes. And Tom Cotton, too. It's okay to still be afraid of him. They're the same sort of nightmare, but I think Ben Sasse has a little bit more heartland polish about him. And so we're 14 minutes into the second hour of the program, $205 to go to finish fundraising for the week. And let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
Sorry about overrunning like that, but I had to get the Ben Sasse audio out of the way. What a punk.
Oh, that's okay. It's your show. Not my show yet.
That's that comes at the back porch, right?
Well, kind of, yeah. 32 days, huh?
32 days, yes.
So now you've reached the record I set days going without toilet paper.
Oh, wow. I didn't think of it in those terms. I'm not sure who had the worst of it. I'm guessing you.
Probably you. I don't mind doing showers.
And today has been kind of a red letter day because I have had exactly 2 nicotine pouches.
I never used those things.
Well, they're a relatively new phenomenon, but boy, they beat the hell out of the gum or that stupid patch.
Or maybe Shantex.
Yeah, I'd never take that stuff.
I had a doctor prescribe it to me. And I tried it for one day, and you can't sleep on the damn stuff. It has so many side effects.
Well,
so I ended up giving it to my apprentice for him to quit smoking, and it worked for him.
I guess it does for some people.
Yeah.
But that whole possibility it'll make you want to kill yourself. I wasn't up for that.
No, that was, I just couldn't sleep with it when I took that stuff. It just made me jumpy or something. I don't know. Monday, I'll be finishing up the 69th revolution of the sun for myself.
Wow. Happy birthday come Monday.
Yep.
So you're going to do your birthday weekend over the weekend then?
No, I don't do birthdays anymore.
Aw, come on. At least treat yourself to a trip to the dispensary, Sparky.
I don't need to go to the dispensary.
Well, you don't go because you need to. You go because it's your birthday. Go and get something special, something different.
I don't want to make the drive.
I understand. But, you know, and maybe
I don't know what it costs, but they'll deliver here, but I don't know how much more extra it would cost or how minimum the order has to be.
Well, I'm not doing that either right now because anything runs a risk of making me, I'm afraid of wanting a cigarette, but it would be fun. It would be fun to just be able to pick out a different flavor or a different strain or something like that. And just, you know, just for the novelty of it. But, oh, God, every other state in the union and every other country on earth will legalize cannabis before West Virginia does because we're backwards. That's why.
Oh, you never know. Do you have ballot propositions?
Oh, no.
Okay.
You can't trust hillbillies with ballot propositions. We got constitutional amendments.
That they put on the ballot?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I guess that's kind of like that?
I forget how many we had on the ballot this time. It was a bunch of them. I just check with the California Labor Fed, and I just use all their endorsements for the propositions.
That probably makes sense because the propositions, if propositions are, and I know they can be, like the constitutional amendments here, depending on the level of nefariousness involved with them, they will make them as convoluted as possible to make people actually vote the wrong way.
But I haven't seen anybody around here lately in a couple of years. Used to be that they'd, when they wanted to get something on the ballot, they'd stand in the front of the grocery stores with the petitions.
Yeah.
Get your signature and stuff. I haven't seen that happen in years around here now. So I don't know where they're going. Probably they don't even bother up here. They just go to the Bay Area in L.A.
Go where all the people are.
Yeah. I don't know if my Congress critter will get voted out. Same gal's running against him again. She's got some good ads out. I voted for her. We'll see what happens. I know there's one county that's really a hotbed for progressive stuff. Nevada County is really turning pretty progressive. My cousins live up there, and they hate Donald Trump with a passion. But this is still a Republican county here. Did you happen to see that Vindman ad that came out today from Vote Vets and the Lincoln Project?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
It just came out today. It's pretty good. Has Vindman's wife in it. Talking about when she heard of him. Back in 2004 when he was wounded.
Oh, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking to see if I can.
Just go to the Lincoln Project on YouTube.
Oh, God. Try that a different way. Well, in point of fact, I'd probably better do it on a different device if we're going to run it. Okay. There we go. Hopefully this is it.
No military spouse ever wants to get.
Here, let's get it. I was busy potting it up. There we go.
Here's one call no military spouse ever wants to get. And for me, that call came in October 2004 when I heard a voice telling me Alex had been injured by a roadside bomb.
The last time you saw me was here.
Dad. Do not worry. I will be fine for telling the truth.
The first time I felt threatened was just after Alex's testimony.
With Colonel Vindman, I'm not going to focus or comment on a former junior employee.
Well, I'm not happy with it, but you'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens.
The most powerful man in the world came after our family, but what happened to us can happen to anyone. We receive thousands of letters of support. America is so much better than Donald Trump. But he can cost this nation so much more with four more years.
This is America. This is the country I've served and defended. Here, right matters.
Vote Vets and the Lincoln Project are responsible for the content of this advertising.
That's pretty profound.
And the girl in the mirror ad they did, is pretty good too. Come out with a couple, it seems like, every day.
Oh, they're an amazing shop.
So did you hear the news that was on Reuters?
Which? I mean, not like what?
Stock prices for guns are going up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not surprising. Potential Democratic presidencies are great for the gun business because the Republicans all Democrats gonna get your guns now. You better believe it. They gonna get your guns.
Donnie ought to be invested in firearms stock.
Yeah, it's not worth it. It's really not.
Oh, I see. His wife was also on CNN. Rachel Vindman was on CNN a couple hours ago.
Well, here, you mentioned the girl in the mirror. Now, let's try that one. Unpaid product placement.
Imagine a girl looking in the mirror, searching for role models in the world to give her hope that one day she too can make a difference. Now imagine how she feels when she watches women being verbally attacked.
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
Maligned.
And this monster that was on stage with Mike Pence, who destroyed her last night, by the way. But
belittled.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
President.
Okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
Harassed.
Blood coming out of her, wherever.
Insulted.
And I'd look her right in that fat, ugly face of hers. I'd say,
your daughters are listening and absorbing that message right in front of your eyes. Now imagine a different future for her. A future with a president who doesn't just value a female voice, but chooses one to be his right-hand woman. A strong woman. A woman with compassion. A woman unafraid to take on a bully.
And I want to add, Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
I'm speaking.
A woman who not only believes in the American dream, she embodies it. Imagine that little girl in the mirror, because that little girl is yours. And your actions on November 3rd will define who she sees. Vote for change. Vote for her. The Lincoln Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That's good. That's very good.
Well, I made it through 3 days without PG&E shutting down my power.
Oh, yeah. I saw your note a couple of nights ago saying you may get disappeared, but hadn't happened.
Oh, it was in the newspaper and all over the news, but they only turned off a small portion of the county.
Well, I'm seeing news right now of a huge fire in South San Francisco. Massive, described it.
What the hell's burning in South San Francisco?
Thought to have started in a mobile home in the area. The man who owned the property was found dead. 4-alarm fire, South San Francisco, near the iconic South San Francisco, the industrial city sign. I've been by there. That's on the road coming from SFO.
Yeah.
There was a mandatory evacuation order issued for Carnelian Road, Sonya Road, Mountain Road, Ridgeview Court, Viewmont Terrace. Wow.
Well, they probably got the high winds down there because they were talking about most of the Bay Area counties were possible shutdowns.
Well, just what California needs.
And I mean, these winds are gusty.
And by the way, earlier today, the New York Times reported the Trump administration rejected a request for aid from California for its devastating wildfires, a rare refusal for disasters on that scale. And Gavin Newsom retweeted it saying, we are appealing this. And then in short order, lo and behold, somebody got hold of Trump and said, are you stupid? You're not going to win California, but this isn't going to win you any friends anywhere else either. And they backtracked.
The kicker on that one is that Tom McClintock, who is a congressman in the Sierra Nevada foothills, got out a little bit in front of it and said he was going to get in touch with the president. And then he came back out and said, I talked to the president and he's changed. So unsaid, please vote for me.
Yeah. And McClintock is a huge maggot.
But that one fire, I saw the story. I forget the name, the fire. But it was east of Fresno. I think it was in Fresno County, which which Nunes is the congressman. I don't hear much about him anymore since the cow incident.
Oh, he pogo-sticked up onto the cross a couple of, maybe a week, in the last week or so, claiming that, I guess the nefarious forces of the left had burned down a trailer that had a big Devin for Congress sign on it.
Must have been the Antifa.
Well, the BLM Antifa, George Soros, the New World Order, United Nations blue helmets. That's who it was.
And the black helicopters.
Yeah, and but Obama's with the camps. Don't forget those.
Oh yeah, your United Nations helicopters are blue. I understand. James in Illinois, who has considerable time in California, says South San Francisco, the whole hill is covered with dry grass. That's what most of those fires out there start with, from what I've heard. Yeah, it looks pretty sere, pretty barren, that hillside does. Thank you to Clarence. Thank you, Clarence, in South Carolina. We are down to $180 to finish the week. And we're halfway through the program. Thank you, Clarence. Thank you very, very kindly. By the way, when I was talking about wondering if the Sassies prayed for Obama over the breakfast table, Brother Deacon Asa said, yeah, they prayed for President Obama every single day. Imprecatory prayer. You know, may his days be numbered on the earth, yada, yada, yada. Well, let's run around the room and see if anybody's got anything to say. Hey, Steve in Georgia, how you doing, buddy?
Bob, what's going on, man?
Steve!
Love!
Gordo!
Gordo! Get your ass off my couch, Gordo. Ah, oh, geez, Bob, I did something really interesting last night. Have you ever seen the Mrs. Waterford character on the Hulu special?
I don't have Hulu.
Have you ever seen a picture of her?
No.
Okay. Well, if you ever do a side by side, and I posted it last night in chat, she looks just like this Handmaid's Tale they're trying to see right now. I mean, life is imitating art or vice versa or whatever, but it's just fucking eerie, man.
Oh, okay. Really? Okay. Yep. Gotcha.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, if you did a side-by-side, they could almost be sisters, you know, and they even have the same voice, the same tone. I can just see her. Hold them down, you know. Jesus. We're headed in some scary waters here, man, and I've been trying to figure out all week, and other people in the Horn chat room is as well, is how long will the senators have to question this woman? Does anybody know? Is there any rules been established?
What do you mean? It's over.
Well, they're done questioning.
When it hits the floor, I mean, doesn't each senator get an allocated amount of time to question her?
No.
No.
No, it doesn't.
That only happens. That's what the committee's for. In general, on the floor, in the floor portion of it, they'll just pontificate. There will be an established number of an established amount of time set for debate.
Debate, yeah. And how much is set established time for each senator? I guess that's what I'm
saying. It's not for each senator. Each side gets a set amount of time.
Oh, Christ.
And every senator won't speak.
I'm trying to think forward and how the fuck we can gum up the works on this and just drag it out at least until the lame duck, until a president victory has been declared.
Steve, it ain't going to happen.
I know. I've been beating my head against the wall trying to figure something out, and I can't come up. I got nothing. I don't have anything.
I mean, it's going to happen. We just have to deal.
Vote on Halloween.
Jeez, that's pretty fucking fitting, isn't it? It's not funny, but what else can you do? And one of the things that really terrifies me is I think the number one priority is to get her in there so she can, if it goes to the Supremes, she can call it for Orange. I don't think Obamagate is their number one priority. That's just the cherry on the cake. If they could take away the Affordable Care Act, I think their main objective is to steal this election via the Supreme Court, a.k.a. Bush v. Gore 2000.
Well, right. And so you got to remember in Bush v. Gore, they say this is a one off. This ruling shall never be considered to be precedent, blah, 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 blah. Well, the fact that it happened is precedent.
I mean, is everyone else, is anyone else in the Horn family, including yourself, Bob, is concerned about this as I am, or am
Heck
I just
yes.
being paranoid?
No, you're not being absolutely. Paranoid. This is terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that the Obamacare is just the cherry on top.
Right.
And all this Obamagate stuff is all, you know, they're trying to just take the same playbook with the, you know, the Hillary Gate and emails and all that. So they're just trying to make shit up, throw a bunch of shit against the wall, see what sticks.
Right now they got nothing. Even evil Tom Bosley, the old orange is pissed at him. He couldn't come up with anything.
And Rudy Giuliani, I mean, Bob, have you gone into this at all with Rudy and all the
I made an allusion last night.
His daughter's turned on him.
Yeah, this guy handed me like some emails. This guy in Delaware at a computer repair shop.
In a random computer store.
Yeah. And brought them to me. Yeah, that's what happened. Definitely. That's definitely what happened.
If anybody believes him, you know.
Nobody does, and that's precisely why, for instance, Twitter shut that shit down immediately, and that in turn caused. I mean, goddamn, he's stupid. That immediately caused the right wing to start having conniptions. All about how there's some, and it happened, you know, Lindsey Graham and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, had a conniption on air yesterday, and we're going to subpoena Jack Dorsey of Twitter to come explain to us in the Senate about how they're getting away with censoring, because First Amendment doesn't apply.
It's their platform, but they tried to be within their rules and guidelines, and obviously Rudy isn't.
Kaylee McEnany tweeted that bullshit story out of the New York Post, which is how they tried to weaponize this goofy ass story from Giuliani, and she got her account shut down for it. They actually shut down Kaylee McEnany's personal account. And then they completely scrubbed any reference to that dumbass story. And so there's Ted Needlenose Cruz saying,
this is election interference and we're 19 days out from an election. The Senate Judiciary Committee wants to know what the hell is going on.
Josh Hawley had himself a conniption. But it was so transparently, patently obvious that the story was complete and utter bullshit that even Twitter saw through it.
Well, maybe DeFi could get the Senate Judiciary Committee to bring it up as an emergency investigation.
Oh, Jesus, that woman. That woman. Oh, God damn that woman.
No, set back the vote on Comey Barrett and investigate
Fuck
this
her.
Allegation.
She kissed Lindsey's ass.
I know she did, but you're looking for, everybody's looking for ways to postpone the Amy Comey Barrett thing.
She's not going to do it.
Wait a minute. This was a Republican on the Judiciary Committee asking for the Judiciary Committee to look into this event. Now, if the Democrats can go ahead with the Republicans and bring this up as more important than Amy Comey Barrett and hold hearings on this and postpone the vote on Amy Comey Barrett to investigate the Russian bullshit feeding the garbage to Giuliani, it might postpone the Amy Comey Barrett vote long enough to push it into the lame duck.
Never going to happen.
No, but I can
dream. What does it matter if it's pushed into the lame duck? I mean, she's on the court.
No. Pushing it into the lame duck becomes very important because there are two Senate races that will be seated as soon as each state certifies their election. And those could be two Democrats into the Senate for the lame duck.
Which would make it 50-50.
And you've already got two Republicans, theoretically, who have said they're going to vote against her.
And I can guarantee you if they lose, which they will, they're not going to vote against her.
Well, the other thing, Roger, one of those senators who will immediately take office is the seat in Georgia. And
Arizona.
I know, but wait just a sec, because this is kind of important. That person will not be seated anytime soon, because as Steve from Georgia Stan can tell you, that's going to wind up in a runoff, because nobody's going to, with a ballot, and it's by design, with a ballot that big, nobody's going to get 50% of the vote. So there will be a runoff between the top two vote getters. If Raphael Warnock is one of them, that's awesome. But the runoff will be, I mean, have they established the date for the runoff yet, Steve?
It could be determined, or they may have a set date sometime in January. Bob, I'll have to research that for you.
So in other words, that senator will not be taking a seat in time for this scenario to play out the way we would like for it to.
Well, I guess I was smelling too many.
Well, unless you could avoid a runoff, unless the Reverend could just run away with it. If Joe fucking Lieberman could get out of the way, that son of a bitch, man.
January 5th.
He's going to suck up a lot of votes.
January 5th is the runoff.
Thanks, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if Joe Lieberman would get out of the way, you know, he's in there by design, and I would love to see that investigated. Who's paying him to stay in? He knows he has no chance of winning. What the hell is he doing there?
Well, he gets a check every month.
Where's that check coming from, Roger?
Isn't he still a senator?
No, Lieberman, his son. He's
Matt Lieberman. No, okay, I can actually, because I've got some experience delving into this up here with some campaign stupidity. It's a little known fact that you can run for office and you can be paid for running for office. Election law, federal election law, allows you to run for office and be paid something more than the salary you were earning when you decided to run, that you presumably gave up so you could run for office, or some percentage of the office you're running for. So running for office can actually be a pretty nice gig, because not only do you get, is it legal to pay you straight up out of money that you raise for campaigning.
Oh, shit, out of contributions.
Yeah, hell yeah.
For maggot money?
Jesus. Yeah.
So you can pay yourself. Oh, but wait, there's more. Then you get a per diem, and then you get mileage and expenses.
Jesus Christ. Meals. Lodging,
so we've got a perpetual candidate here in West Virginia, who has been riding that gravy train since 2016.
Well, yeah, remember the "I am not a witch" chick from Delaware? That's why she kept running. She knew she wasn't going to win, but she kept raking in enough money to ride the gravy train.
And so, it's not dark money or anything. You can straight up give to campaigns. And, you know, if, say, you're a Republican and you really, really care about Matt Lieberman and you think he's a great Democrat, you can contribute to him. And in turn, he can get paid. And a per diem. And mileage. And expenses. Next thing you know, you're talking about real money.
Well, if you're one of the donors, at least you hope you can get invited to the pool party.
Cowbell, Bob. Come on. That was absurd, man.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's troubling. It's troubling, and I think that's why the senators, even knowing they're going to get their heads handed to them, they're also cavalier about this. Because hey, they know the fix is in.
Can I add something to what Steve said? So Steve said it doesn't really matter whether the Senate votes before the election or in the lame duck. But I and technically there is no difference, right? She's going to be on the court regardless. But for history's sake, and Bob, we talked about the asterisk, right? It's going to be a massively more a darker asterisk if she is voted on, if the vote happens in the lame duck, right? Can we agree on that?
Yeah. No, I think it's a darker asterisk if the vote happens before the lame duck.
You do? Why? Why is that?
Because then it becomes an even more naked exercise in blunt force political power, I think.
But what about if all those senators that we're going to vote for, well, that are going to anyway, if they lose their elections, basically she gets on the Supreme Court with illegitimate senators voting for her, right? Or like expired senators.
Well, the reason I'm hoping for it to go to the lame duck is that after the election, and assuming a good election for our side, i.e., Biden-Harris, we take back the majority in the Senate, we hold the majority in the House, the Democrats can say to the Republican senators, look, if you put her on the court, I guarantee you that we will push the Supreme Court to 13 people on January 21st and dump 4 nominations, which will be rammed through with the exact same speed that you did with Amy Comey Barrett, if you seat her on the court. If you do not seat her on the court, we will come up with a nomination and expect it to be approved. So your choice is, you put Amy Comey on the court, that's fine, you can do it, you've got the votes, but you are guaranteeing a 13-seat Supreme Court, and we will ask for Puerto Rico, and what's the other territory?
D.C.
Washington, D.C., and possibly even Guam to become states.
American
and
Samoa.
That will give us 6 more senators, and fuck you. Now, either don't put her on the court or bend over and kiss your ass goodbye.
Roger.
Kind of hardball, Roger. Really.
Roger, not
no,
to...
I really don't, but I have hopes.
Okay, Roger. There's only one.
Here's the rub. Go ahead, Bob.
There's only one flaw in your reasoning. If I were the Republicans, I would take that. I would take that bet yesterday, and I would say, okay, we're not gonna confirm her. We're gonna leave that seat open for you to fill. Congratulations. You know what that means? That means that that we fill that seat and the Republicans still have a 5-4 majority in the Supreme Court and we can't do dick about it.
Now, you know what we do, Bob?
What's that?
Ideally, we make that promise. We make that deal. We get it. And then we say, ha ha, fuck you. Raw power. We're going to do it anyway. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
don't say, don't
make up some bullshit reason like they do.
Well, you know,
bullshit reason.
You know,
you know the reason? You know the bullshit reason?
Because we can.
We won.
You lost.
Elections has consequences. I'd just like to remind the learned gentleman from Mississippi and Louisiana in particular, I'd like to remind the gentleman from Louisiana that elections have consequences.
Well, Steve, you're a lawyer. This may be in your wheelhouse. Lindsay, from what I gather, was groveling for money on the Senate floor. Isn't that
yes.
Illegal?
Yes.
Who cares?
Shouldn't Jerry Nadler be sharpening his pen or something, or... Let's get the ball rolling on this, man.
Well, no, here's the deal. Hey, Bob, tell me what you think of this. How does that square with what's in the Constitution, which says a person who makes remarks on the floor is completely exempt from anything, from prosecution?
Well, the floor is one thing, all right?
Was that where – I don't know where he was doing it. Is that where he was doing it? I don't know.
No, he ran out to a microphone outside the hearing room. And that is – now, there's another rule about going to and coming from.
Hasn't that been litigated? I'm thinking there was something with a – wasn't there a congressman who hit somebody in a car or something and argued that? And I don't remember what the outcome, but that set of facts sounds familiar to me. Am I wrong?
I don't think you are, but I don't know what the outcome was. But going to and coming from makes a hell of a lot more sense inside a building.
Right.
I mean – you know, you could punch the lights out of somebody going to and coming from the little Lindsay's room.
Particularly if you're an originalist.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have no indoor plumbing.
You know what? I'm going to really anger a lot of people right now.
Uh-oh.
First of all, I don't have any problem with the Republicans doing this and Trump doing that. I don't have a problem with it. He went, and we made the same argument about Obama. Obama's term is 4 years, from January of the 1 year to January.
Yeah, that's what
that's what
RBG said. Or she said the same thing.
That's what we said when we were saying, well, you know, when McChinless said, well, we should wait for let the American people decide. And my thought was they already did. They elected the guy for 4 years, and when 4 years is up, he can't do it anymore. I just don't have any problem with this raw power. I just don't. And I get so sick of Democrats whimpering and whining and pussyfooting around. Oh, well, they're hypocrites. Guess what, guys? It doesn't fucking matter.
Well, but the thing is, Steve, it matters to the extent that if they had seated Merrick Garland, if they had even given him a hearing. The Democrats would have not a leg to stand on, but they declared a rule that didn't exist.
Okay.
They declared a rule that didn't exist, and now they refuse to live by that because they've come up with another wrinkle. Well, yeah, but I mean, it doesn't count when the president and the senator are of the same party. And it is hypocritical, and it's not improper to call them out on it. But in point of fact, if you want to drill down even further and become more granular about it, the very nature of the and you want to talk about the exercise of raw political power, I keep going back to what I was talking about when Merrick Garland was nominated. When Chinless Mitch said he doesn't get a hearing,
bingo. I know what you're going to say.
Then he puts on his robe and walks into the Supreme Court and says, "Hi, y'all, which chair's mine?"
Yep. I'm here by acclamation.
I am here by consent. They consented with their silence. Silence is consent is an ancient, as far as it goes, an ancient principle.
That would have been the right thing to do, Bob. And
you know, and beyond that, Bob, that makes them fine. That makes them show their hand. It's what the Democrats did was surrender, and that's what they keep doing.
Keep doing it. 2004. Yep. Surrender. Surrender. Surrender.
No. I'm not willing to go that far. You know, I'm not at the cheese eating surrender monkeys part of the program yet. I might have been that way 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But I at least the last 4 years have taught me what it was that these people that we used to criticize as milksop, sewing circle centrists were trying to do. They were trying to maintain a sort of stasis with government, understanding how quickly and how far off the rails it can go if it's given a half an opportunity to do so by people of bad faith.
Well, we've seen that at work in this presidency. So Barack Obama didn't say, "Hey, Merrick, get your robe." He didn't do that because he was trying to maintain the fiction, and it is a fiction that everything is okay and that this system really works. It doesn't. It's broken. The list of things, the generational list of things that need to be fixed is almost incomprehensible.
But if we go back into Supreme Court nominations prior to these last ones from this president, every president attempted to appoint somebody to the court that would get support from, quote, both sides. And I'm thinking that, you know, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg got elected by the Senate, what, 97, 98 votes in favor? You go back all the way through the history, and even Merrick Garland was a more center-of-the-road judge who many Republicans would have voted for because he wasn't a flaming liberal. Had voted for in the past. But with what Trump has done and McConnell, they have made sure that all the appellate court judges that have been done by Trump, 200 and something, and the 110 that Barack Obama was not allowed to appoint, they have appointed ideologues. I mean, outrageous fucking ideologues.
Yeah.
And what my fear is that the Democrats, the next time they're in power, will continue to look for
centrists,
middle of the road centrist judges. I would love for, and I know Biden won't do it because he's a milquetoast. If he wasn't the only choice, I wouldn't be voting for him because he fucked over my Social Security. But I would love for them to find another William O. Douglas at the end of his career person and put that person up. I mean, the most flaming liberal, in your face kind of judge that they could find, and you know, go the other side ideologically to this batshit crazy conservative crap.
Well, and
we're getting
if I,
out of the Republicans.
Yeah, if I could just comment on what you're saying there for a minute, Roger. Let's see, what do they say in the Senate? I associate myself with Roger's remarks. I think it's important to understand at least in the universe in which it happens. The Republicans have all along wanted to get rid of the filibuster, because they wanted these raging ideologues on the bench. Okay?
And the Democrats played along on the appellate court side.
Yeah. And so, you know, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg got 98 votes, she did so because the rule was still in effect that you had to have 60 to even get to get out of committee.
Okay. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a sufficiently centrist judge.
Well, remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg voted against the Massachusetts law that prevented those well-meaning Catholic grannies from going up and berating women walking into a Planned Parenthood clinic with posters of fetus ceviche. She voted with the majority to say, no, that statute's got to go. That's unconstitutional. That's a violation of the First Amendment. At the same time that they upheld their own goddamn buffer zone rule of, like, you know, 60 feet around the building there at the Supreme Court. That's why I've always said that there's really no such thing as a liberal Supreme Court justice. Because since they are in the law business, they by definition are preservationists of the status quo to a certain extent, or to at least some extent. But getting rid of the filibuster was a case of don't throw me in the briar patch. you know, what happened was Harry Reid got rid of the filibuster because they wouldn't let anything, they wouldn't let any judges through, Mitch wouldn't, on that 60-vote rule. So Harry Reid got rid of it for lower court judges, but kept the 60-vote rule in place for Supreme Court judges. Well, the minute power passed back over to Mitch McConnell, he said, no, that's gone too. And that opened the door to this wish list from the fucking Federalist Society. So, you know, all of that is part of how we get to this point in time. And that's why I favor, frankly, take the Senate, take the House. And no, I don't want 13 justices. I want 15. I want 15 justices because I want enough justices. I want enough new justices on the court to make the goddamn court finally look a little bit like America. What I was talking about last night. It is well past time to have the first black woman sitting on the court. It is time, by God, to have one atheist voice who will speak up for those of us who don't bow and scrape or wear funny headgear or walk in circles or speak in tongues.
Well, at least atheist be a member of the Spaghetti Monster Church.
Well, sure. We need an indigenous member of the court. Okay? Black woman, atheist of any gender, indigenous person. That's three. And we got
Muslim.
And we need a Muslim on the court. We need a Muslim on the court. That's four. And then two more. And I don't want any of them older than 45. And we need to build the infrastructure to find those shining lights, just like the Federalist Society has done.
The only problem is we're about 20 years behind times.
Well, we are, but it can all be done. And the thing is, the one thing everybody agrees on for the time being is that once you have expanded the court to 15, I think it was either Ben Sasse or maybe Mike Lee or Josh Hawley Smoot who said that the court is a one-way ratchet. You can only expand. You can't contract. That's not entirely true, but for all intents and purposes, let's say the House and Senate do that, and in 2022, the American people are so fucking incensed that they turn the House and Senate back over to Republicans. The Republicans cannot fire the justices who have been confirmed, so they're stuck with 15 justices. They can only add more. Now, do they want to? So, if we increased it to 15, we've got three already. We would be 9-6. Okay? So, they would have to add at least four to make it 19, probably six to make it 21. And at that point in time, you're approaching the kind of numbers you have on any of the given circuit courts. Because that's one of the little things that we don't think about so much. You hear about, well, so and so was reversed or affirmed by the Circuit Court of Appeals. There's 30 plus judges. I think 36 maybe on the entire panel of a U.S. Circuit Court of Appeal, but they only hear cases three judges at a time. And then if you want the whole circuit to hear it, you have to win a petition. Win on a petition or a motion for a hearing en banc. And it would actually be a way of bringing some expanding the court is a way of bringing some responsibility to the court, because it could be part of an overall court reform package that Sheldon Whitehouse was talking about.
So you'd be looking at, okay, the court's got 15 people in it. Any nine can hear a case,
I wouldn't do that. I'd make the full 15 work the whole time. I don't want any of that bullshit. I want all 15 on the job. But you could, for instance, create a you could create a judicial oversight panel, and actually have laws, rules, canons, if you will, that are enforced upon the judges. Because it did get mentioned in there, in the hearings this week, that Supreme Court justices, while they claim that they follow a code of ethics, they are not. It is not beholden on them to do so. And while nobody mentioned it, the first thing that came to mind for me was Fat Dead Tony going duck hunting with his pal, big time Dick Cheney before he dicks you, at a time when Cheney was actively a litigant before the court. Now, if that had happened in a lower court, no way the judge would have been able to sit on the case. But Fat Dead Tony just said, well, I'm going to be impartial. We'll have a nice, fair hearing, and then I'll rule for my friend, big-time Dick Cheney, before he dicks you. And that's exactly what happened. We could finally fix that. And there's a huge, huge ethics debate inside the legal community about, well, if you've got an oversight committee, then the Supreme Court isn't really supreme anymore. Of course they are. There's still the final word on what the Constitution is and isn't. But they don't get to just make shit up along the way as far as their own ethical conduct is concerned. Like I said, the list, and someone wrote to me the other day, pointing it out as well, the list of stuff that has to be fixed, and I've said this as well, is generations long. Generations worth of harm has been done in 4 years, but frankly, generations worth of harm have been done in generations, too. We need to, frankly, we're in damnatio memoriae territory, but we need to largely get rid of everything that was done from Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, some substantial parts of Bill Clinton, too, and W. and Trump. And considering the speed with which Congress moves, that can't happen in less than 100 years. So I think we just need to be, you know, reality spoken here and clear-eyed about the task before us. So
yeah, let's let Megan jump in.
Yeah, go, Megan.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay, cool. I want to make sure my mic was working. Hi, everyone.
Hey, Megan.
Hey. It's been a while since I talked to you guys. I'm just losing my train of thought. I just want to jump in real quick and say that whoever said that they didn't have a problem with the raw power thing, I'm going to disagree, and I'm just, pardon me for putting it this way, I'm tired of the destructive big dick energy coming in and just, you know, we're going to whip it out and just hit people with it in our politics. I'm just tired of it, period. It just seems like it's turning into a fist fight. And when I say there's no cooperation, I mean, there's no genuine cooperation. It's not cooperation that the Republicans like to define it as, you know, you do what we say and then we might give you something you want. I mean, there's no actual discussion about what's better, good for the American people. And it just seems like, oh, well, we're just going to stomp on people, and that makes us badass. And, you know, that gets the cheering crowds out. And, you know, we're seeing the culmination of that in Trump. And I'm just over it. There's too many people getting hurt by that crap.
Well, and that goes to something that Ron and Raleigh said a minute ago. There's a concept called fairness. He said, by way of example, he said, sure, there is the naked use of power, but by example, remember the cases where Democratic governors were elected and the Republican legislature immediately stripped the Democratic governors of powers that the Republican governors had? That happened twice, I can think of. Tony Evers in Wisconsin. And I can't remember his name, in North Carolina. And he said, what that naked exercise of pure power does is make room for oligarchs. So I think you and Ron are on the same page, Megan.
Well, I mean, what does that do? I mean, all I see is raw, naked, you know, power grab. But for what? So you can stomp on more people, and then what does that prove? I mean...
Hey, Megan, can I play devil's advocate real quick with that?
Okay.
How many countless number of people have been hurt and damaged because Democrats continually bring a butter knife to a bazooka fight?
All right. Well, I'm going to counter that, Roger, and Hold on a minute. You know, I get what you're trying to say about you Democrats need to stand up and fight. Okay, here's the problem with that. And I don't know if it's because I once worked in a domestic violence shelter and I'm a little sensitive to the power dynamics, but this is what I see here. All we've seen the last 4 years from Trump alone, he's blaming Democrats for every damn thing under the sun, whether it's deserved or not. And I'm going to say more than not. Here's the problem with that, and I've been in this position myself. Once people accuse you of shit, even if it's not true, the minute you react in anger, suddenly people will turn on you and say, well, they were right about you. So my problem is, what I see going on, they're continually blaming Democrats for their own shit because it's a naked power grab. Well, how do you deal with bullies? And I believe Bob said before, you deal with bullies is you punch them in the nose. Here's the problem. That only works for some people. And that only works, and I'm going to go out and say it, if you're a guy. Women and other people who had to deal with bullies, we know more. I mean, we are well familiar with the power dynamics of this. We get accused of something, and then there's nothing we can do, which we're not the bad guy. So this is why I say I have a problem with it. Because the Democrats go out, and I'm sitting here like I'm thinking of the recent performance by Joe Biden in that debate with Donald Trump. Here's the problem with that. Joe Biden literally could have picked up that podium and hit Donald Trump square in the mouth. And we'd all be here cheering him on, saying, yeah, finally, you got the man to shut up. Can you imagine what those newspaper titles would have been the next day?
Oh, God.
Okay. That's my point. So my question is, and I'm genuinely asking, how the hell do you deal with a bully when if you fight back, they're going to turn around and say, well, they were right about you. And and you got people out here with QAnon that are believing Democrats and RBG are these Satan-worshipping, baby-eating devils, and Trump's out there trying to fight them. How the hell do you reverse that power dynamic with that kind of crap going on?
I think that's kind of a lengthy discussion, and it looks like you've started it.
I have no idea, Megan. I don't know.
Because generally, like, I faced this crap, and I can tell you, it is a no-win situation. I can fast tell you, like, at some point you say, fuck it. I don't care what other people think of me. But that is a little problematic when you're talking about people whose literal jobs depend on people who think well of you. I mean, I've come back to this, and I've come back to this, and honestly, I don't have an answer for it. But this is what I see playing out with this crap. Now, I can't say that I agree with, I guess, Bob earlier in the program said something about West Virginia and Kentucky going with this Republican light stuff, which personally, I don't see the sense in that, like, because that's really just not.
But that's what you have to run for a Democrat in a state like those. Doug Jones, for instance, in Alabama, is fighting for his life to keep that seat in Democratic hands in Alabama.
Because Roy Moore was so bad, but it was also my understanding Doug Jones was, I don't know, like a defense attorney or something, because it was the black women.
No, he was a U.S. attorney, a federal prosecutor.
Okay, I read somewhere that him, he worked with the black community, and that's why they came out in droves to vote
right.
for him.
Right.
Or he took special interest in protecting young women or
took a long time, but he's the one who prosecuted the men who bombed the Baptist Church in 1963 in Birmingham.
Okay. All right.
But what I'm getting at is he still has to come across as being a conservative Southern Democrat. Because whatever passes for progressivism in Alabama or West Virginia is not strong enough to put a candidate over the top. I mean, we've got a Senate seat in play in West Virginia that never gets talked about because it is going to remain in the hands of the Republicans, and there is not a chance in hell or heaven or anywhere in between that the candidate challenging Shelley Moore Capito is going to beat Shelley Moore Capito. It just ain't gonna happen.
Why is that? Because you simply have more Republicans, or they're just not putting up?
No, there's more Democrats that are registered than Republicans in this state, and a shit ton of independents now. But the progressive candidate can't build enough of a base to win, because the things that matter to progressives are anathema in states like West Virginia and Kentucky and Alabama and Mississippi. Some issues will resonate, health care, whatever. But if the candidate challenging Shelley Moore Capito were to get within 30 percentage points of her, Shelley Moore Capito would just turn on her money faucet and bury her and put out ads about how she supports killing poor little innocent fetuses. And that'd be the end of it. I mean, it's the end of it before it even starts.
Well, you got to have something feeding that, because she's not running the race unopposed, which has happened in Southern Delaware, where I used to live.
She's not running unopposed, Megan.
That's my point.
Well, but that's because we have primaries. She won the primary over another marginal candidate, and so she gets to be the Democratic nominee. And along the way, she gets paid for being a candidate.
Wait a minute, I thought Capito was a Republican.
Capito is a Republican. I'm talking about her challenger.
Oh. Well, who's running against her?
An allegedly progressive woman who is supported by that outfit called Justice Democrats that was started by Cenk Uygur. And then he got bounced out of Justice Democrats when a bunch of his misogynistic blog posts came to light.
Oh, God.
And you know, previously, in 2016, she ran against Joe Manchin, got beat like 65-35%, and then immediately announced that she was going to run, or not immediately, but everybody knew she was going to run for Shelley. Run against Shelley. I don't know who she'll run against in 2000. Well, let's see. Yeah, 2022. She can run against Joe Manchin in the primary again.
Well, the only thing I can think of there is that the incumbents are extremely hard to unseat, but it's not unheard of. But it sounds like you got going down in there what used to happen, or it's happening in Delaware right now. And that is that you just have, they're running these candidates that are just loop-de-loo, and no one's getting serious about it. Because,
Megan,
from Georgia.
What it is, Megan, is it's much, it's, West Virginia has become like a much more deep southern state, in that our Democratic Party now is moribund. Okay? It is, and it has been since Joe Manchin took it over in the early part of this century. the Democratic Party in West Virginia is nothing more than a cult of personality for Joe Manchin. He owns it lock, stock, and barrel. Mm-hmm. I mean, consider at the state Democratic convention in 2016, we passed a resolution against mountaintop removal. Didn't matter. It was part of the state party platform. First time that had ever happened. A resolution was also passed requiring the requiring Democratic office holders to support the Democratic presidential nominee. That didn't matter either. So it's a moribund party, which on the one hand means that, I mean, there are a lot of good progressive people in West Virginia Democratic Party politics. Probably the best one in the entire state is Boss Man Wayne, period. But there are also a lot of people who don't understand the, process, and there is a lot of sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol too.
What I was gonna say is that either. I don't know. Steve from Georgia Stan mentioned Christine O'Donnell in her Senate run back in 2010, and I remember that. But now we have this, the Republican Party in Delaware is like, it seems like they're trying their damnedest, but they're just running these weird candidates. And it's like, are you guys even serious about this? We have this one senator who's running against Chris Coons who posted that that disgusting Facebook post after RBG died, and she's still in the race. I don't know if y'all heard about that.
I did.
Yeah, she's still in the race. So I don't even know what to say anymore, because I mean, it seems like it would be a smart thing to run the Air Force candidate against Mitch McConnell. But why the hell is she supporting Trump? And then call yourself a Democrat. That's what I'm trying to.
Well, right. And part
Marine,
of the. Okay.
She's an ex-Marine, not an Air Force.
I'm yeah. sorry. Well, she's still the military, right?
The one in Texas is Air Force.
What, yeah, MJ Hager?
Yeah. And so look, that's what happened here in West Virginia. In the primary, the choice was between this perpetual candidate who runs for office and gets paid to do it, versus a retired Army officer, and you know, he ran for Congress last time and got beat, so he ran for the Democratic nomination for Senate this time and got beat again, and he's got this really good fire and brimstone, fire breathing, by God, we're going to show him, you know, speech that he gives, but everybody knows that in 2016 this Democrat voted for Donald Trump.
Well, that could be your problem right there. Right there.
All right. Let me share a couple of emails. And by the way, thank you to Jeremy, not in Vermont, for jumping in. We're down to 175 to go to finish the week. And y'all, we, like I said earlier, I got more bills than we got money coming in. And it just works that way. So we probably will have a further conversation about raising the fundraising goal, because I do keep getting emails from members of the community who actually do support the program, saying, yeah, raise the goal, raise the goal, raise the goal. So that's probably going to happen, but not going to, that announcement isn't coming
quick,
yet. But wait.
Bob, I sent you a gift. Did you get it?
Yes.
You did? Okay.
Yes. I picked it up today.
Okay.
And thank you very kindly.
You're welcome.
But so we're at 175 to finish the week. And somewhere out there, I think, total bills. Frankly, it'll take everything we can raise all the way to the end of the month just to keep the bills paid. And we're talking about power and internet and telephony and all of that. It's frustrating and worrisome. So there's that. But we are at 175 to go to finish the week. And thank you, Jeremy, not in Vermont. Matt in San Francisco. naked power. I'm not a fan of exercising power for the sake of power alone. My concern is the more the court swings to the right, the more suffering the general population endures. The deeper and deeper the suffering, people will undoubtedly feel helpless and desperate. And when people are desperate, they turn to violence. Granted, lefties are not as prone to violence as the right, but people can only take so much. In my opinion, rebalancing the court, the more difficult it is to force right-wing fascist policies on the citizens of the United States. I don't know what the answer is, but the tyranny of the minority must be countered to prevent violence in the long term. Precisely. And see, that's part of the politics of American right-wing grievance, too. And so far as you've got this little noisy minority of people with a lot of goddamn guns who think they're being oppressed, when in fact they have all the power. But if you ask them to wear a mask to keep from spreading a freaking virus, well, somebody's nailing them right into the cross. And you wind up with these plots to kidnap and murder people like the governor of Virginia and the governor of Michigan. And even now, there are people running around, Republicans, saying, well, you know, I think they've got to be listened to. They may have some legitimate grievances. That governor in Michigan may have deserved to be arrested and tried and killed. It's really happening.
And that's freaking dangerous.
Yeah. And Lee in New York says, to Megan's point, I recommend not fighting back the same way. Republicans nominated right-wing unqualified judges. Democrats should nominate left-wing qualified judges. Change the argument. Say, our candidates are qualified. The ABA says so. Well, unfortunately, the ABA says that Amy Coney Barrett's qualified, too. Curious standard, then, I suppose. James in Illinois points out, you know, Kamala did it. I'm talking here, Mr. Vice President. Punching the bully in the nose. Jude, in the Great Northwest, power versus force. If I may, the words... Real power provides one to move forward as a fully intact human being, whereas force contracts one, using verb form to lessen the self. The distinction is important in our current times. Power versus force. And when you're using force, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And that plays into it well, and thank you very kindly to Jude. We are down to 165. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so very much. So, with all of that having been said, I would like to turn the matter to... We spend a lot of time with very serious stuff here, but I have one of the sillier stories that I have seen in recent days. It comes, of course, from popular culture and from the world of film. People out there are having a shit hemorrhage over Gal Gadot. You remember, she played Wonder Woman in that film that was produced by the current Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, the plug in the swamp drain.
He produced Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah. That's why. Yeah. That's why I have never seen it, and I never will.
I'm a Wonder Woman
plus
fan,
there's another Wonder Woman movie ready for rollout.
Yeah.
They haven't rolled out.
Gotten delayed.
Yeah, Wonder Woman 1984. Well, Gal Gadot has another job. She's gotten another gig. And certain people who apparently don't know much about history are having shit fits. Because she has been cast to play... Cleopatra. Mm-hmm.
Oh dear.
They're going to make.
I heard something about this.
They're going to make. They're going to make Cleopatra. It's going to be made. It's going to be directed by a woman. Gal Gadot will star, and it will be Cleopatra told from Cleopatra's perspective. And immediately, somebody ran out onto social media. Author James Hall said, Hollywood has always cast white American actresses as the Queen of the Nile. For once, can't they find an African actress? And I read that, and I know what whitewashing is, and it's a legitimate problem. But that
the
one...
The Ptolemaic in Dynasty was Greek, wasn't it?
Yep. That's what made me run eat dirt and run rabbits, because Cleopatra wasn't even a little itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny, microscopic bit African. She wasn't Egyptian. She wasn't from the line of the pharaohs. She was from the Ptolemaic dynasty of Macedonian Greece. She was probably a green-eyed redhead and pale as fuck.
And you got an Israeli actress playing her, so...
Well, that's a different story. That gets people wrought for a different reason.
Mm.
But when people... You know, before we jump out and have a hissy, it would be a good idea to actually know the subject matter. The Ptolemies ruled Egypt in the aftermath of the breakup of Alexander the Great's empire. And Ptolemy, one of his generals, got the Egypt chunk of it. And she was the last Ptolemy on the Egyptian throne. Now, she became beloved of the Egyptians because she actually learned the language, and she gave nominal service to the ancient gods of Egypt. You know, all the
free euros for everybody.
And you know, she had the thing with Julius Caesar, and then she had the thing with Mark Antony and the snake, and, you know, she made an ass of herself. I'm giving myself a cowbell. But she wasn't African. And it would be, you know, but then again, you know, I remember talking when she made Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was supposed to be an Amazon. And the Amazons, in ancient Greek mythology, the Amazons come from up near the Black Sea.
Actually, Bob, on Earth, here in real history, yeah, it comes above the Black Sea, or in Kazakhstan. So I actually studied this as a teenager. In the Wonder Woman fable, it's actually souls that the Greek gods took... that were lost souls that were on Earth and put them on an island called Themyscira. And they were literally created out of clay. Or reborn or rebirthed is how how that story went.
Yeah, so, I mean, this just struck me as beautifully pop-culturally stupid.
Well, I can get the cultural appropriation because there was a hoo-ha over, I don't know, Gods of Egypt or the Moses story where Christian Bale was cast as Moses.
Those are both different. Those are both different.
Right. But he was, I mean, it was a similar thing. But in this case, I think we've just gotten, people are jumping at every little thing without really checking it now. Because there was a makeup blogger that I personally followed that was getting yelled at, who's from Australia, that did a makeup look specifically for women who wear headdresses or the headscarves. And she was being yelled at for cultural appropriation. And I said, hold on a minute. She's trying to provide that for, you know, a different audience. She's not trying to appropriate that, you know, for her own get. I mean, it just goes too far the other direction.
Yeah, and see, in the case of Cleopatra, there's the only cultural being appropriated is Macedonian Greek.
Does that even still exist anymore?
Well, I mean, Macedonia is still very much a going concern. I mean, it was Greek culture in an Egyptian setting is what I'm getting at. The only cultural appropriation that took place was the Greeks appropriating Egyptian culture 2,100 years ago.
Hmm.
because they did. And part of maintaining power was them ruling Egypt and along the way adopting Egyptian cultural iconography. So,
so that was after Alexander the Great decided to take over, I don't know, his little jaunt from...
Well, he conquered everything. When he conquered Persia, he got everything Persia owned. And Persia had by that point in time, under the Achaemenids, had taken over Egypt. So he got Egypt. He also got Persia. He went as far as the Indus River. And his men were sick of it and said, let's go home. And if you don't, we're going to leave you. And so they went home. And he actually caught some sort of fever and died in Babylon. He, like Jesus, was about 33 years old.
But, I mean, so Cleopatra was an actual Nubian, I guess, is the term that was used for black Egyptians.
She wasn't any kind of she wasn't any kind of African person. She was as pale or paler than me.
She was translucent?
Pretty much. What do you think all the makeup was for?
Hey, looks like Atlanta's going to be in the World Series.
That would tickle me pink. I hope so.
Everyone thought the Dodgers were the team to beat.
Well, I know Atlanta's that, and I know that'll upset that'll upset Jan, and that will therefore upset Tracy. But I'm a Braves fan from way back.
Hey, Bob. I would have preferred to see the Reds, but the Reds just laid a big egg. Their pitching was great, but they just laid an egg on the offense.
Couldn't advance a runner to save their souls.
You know how many they left on base in the first game?
Yeah, what, 14, something like that, wasn't it?
Something like that. They didn't score a run, did they?
No, I don't think so.
I think Atlanta shut them out both games.
But I was tickled to see the Reds make it that far.
Well, they finally, if they can hold on to those pitchers, they'll have and the other thing, too, is had it been for a full season, I think the Reds would have worked out the kinks along the way, and I think they would have been done much better. I mean, this season was all about whoever got hot at the right time.
Yeah.
Continue with your political discussion.
And please don't let the Astros get in the World Series, please.
You know what really what really scares me? And you're going to think you've probably already thought about this. If it's Atlanta and the Astros or Tampa Bay, you've got baseball and they're going to allow people in the stands in two of the most COVID infected states in the country.
Yeah. I just don't see that happening.
Well, heck, they're already doing it in football.
I don't know if you saw, Bob, but it's just exactly what I had said earlier about when we talked about the Big Ten versus the SEC.
Right.
We'll see when the Big Ten finally starts, but those SEC schools are blowing up.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just on fire.
They had
the LSU Florida game was
postponed that. And
well, isn't it the six-week mark for when this would develop from when the time school started?
Pretty much within that window. And Nick Saban has the Rona.
Well, I just saw a story that he tested negative, but he's probably still. I have to tell you, I was really impressed with that guy because he was like one of the few muckety-mucks in Alabama basically saying to the students, wear a fucking mask. I don't know if you had seen that, but they actually put, I think,
No, he wasn't making any bones about it.
I mean, he's, a Cracker Orgeron, he's not. I think that Orgeron guy's missing a chromosome.
Wait a minute.
He wears a mask. He wears a mask during the game. I've seen him, but he's already had the Rona.
Ed Orgeron's missing a chromosome. That's beautiful. That was good, Steve. Well, Nick Satan is a smart man.
Did you just say Nick Satan?
Yes. He's the devil.
Why is he the devil?
Oh my God.
And I'm an Ohio State fan. I don't think he's the devil.
It's a long story, but part of the reason he's smarter than most of the other coaches in Alabama is because he ain't from Alabama. He was born in West Virginia.
Cool. Where?
Up north part of the state, Marion County.
Well, where is that? I'm trying to get it in my mind because I don't know if I ever told you when my dad and my stepmom, everybody lived in Ohio and I lived in D.C., I used to drive on
I-70?
70 to 68 and go. I wouldn't take the turnpike anymore because 68 was much more beautiful, and then get back on 70 somewhere around
Wheeling.
What's that? It's
you go 68 across to Morgantown. You pick up 79 north, 79 north to Washington, PA, and that's where you pick up 70 across to Wheeling and into like St. Clairsville and all that shit.
But I didn't take 79. 79 is a turnpike, isn't it?
No.
I thought 79 was the turnpike.
No.
Okay.
76.
79. I-79 runs from
difference.
I-79 runs from Erie to Charleston.
Okay.
What the fuck
68
is the
was beautiful when they finally got it done.
Pennsylvania Turnpike, Sparky.
Which is one of the worst roads I've ever driven.
God, it's a nightmare. You couldn't pay me to get on it.
Which makes no sense because the whole point about turnpikes is they're supposed to be better. And generally speaking, they are. But
is that 70 or 76?
76. Is the turnpike. 70's fine.
I thought it combined at one point, because I've driven up to, like, north of Pittsburgh.
76 and 79 Don't they, Bob?
No. 79 76. Well, maybe way north of Pittsburgh, but no.
Okay.
But anyway, you were asking where's Marion County? Marion County, Steve, is immediately south of Mon County, which is where Morgantown is.
Okay, so when I was on 70 through West Virginia, did I go near it?
You went near it when you were on 68.
Okay.
Because see, that's the thing. 68 terminates at I-79.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because I'm actually so old that I can remember when 68 was U.S. Highway 48.
Oh no, I remember that too. Because my dad and I, when we went to 68's not that old. At least the redone one, because it's they made it. It's basically like a scenic type of thing. Scenic.
Oh God, if you have any acrophobia, any fear of heights at all, it will fuck with you.
And it got those really thin roads on those on the sides of mountains and stuff. I know.
Oh, hell no. I went through that in northern PA. God, worst panic attack of my life. Absolutely not.
You'll be on top of one hill on I-68, and the top of the next hill will be 10 miles away, and you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Uh-uh. Nope.
So,
I was about to say, 180 east or west, the trucker highway. Uh-uh.
Nope. We're running out of time, but we've got 175 bucks to go to finish the finish the week. But I had a note from who's stewing that?
I was stirring. I was waiting for my turn, stirring quietly.
Well, mute if you're going to stir your coffee, okay? Yeah. I get emails that people hate the stirring.
Jesus.
I had a note from Robert. He will F over the world. People around the world who are paying attention know that four more years of Trump will be a disaster for everyone, not just the USA. If he gets in again, whatever he does will ripple over the planet. Right-wing politicians in my country will copy from the U.S. whatever they think they can get away with. They're not very smart. In a local newspaper owned by Murdoch and on our version of Fox, all the commentators are pushing Trump as the savior of Western civilization. Trump better lose. Big time. Signed, Robert in Isolation in Oz. And so it is. It's more than just our country. It's the world.
Well, anybody with any sense knows what the deal is regarding Trump.
Sense?
Yeah, with any sense. Well, no, there, hell of a caveat that.
Is any working gray matter between their ears?
Everybody here on the front porch and in the Horn family generally, we know the deal. We've got sense. There are people, you know, I'm just saying, not everybody.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
I beg to differ. I really have more nickels and dimes, so I don't speak for anybody else, but that's where I'm coming from.
Well, anyway, Bob, tell me again what the fundraising thing is, where we are now.
175.
All right. Well, I'm going to send at least five, maybe more. I'd like to do more, but sometimes...
No, I understand. You know, I understand. So let's call it... We'll call it 170.
All right. But I had an observation. I'm a little late getting here today. But did you watch the visit with Savannah Guthrie and the Tangerine Tiberius last night?
Nope. I promised myself I wouldn't. I saw clips.
Okay. Did you see the clips about his take on QAnon, or excuse me, his evasion regarding his knowledge of QAnon?
No, but I did read that he wouldn't, you know, say that it was fake.
Well, as someone who watched it, see, sometimes you got to take one for the country. You got to take one for the team. And I watched both events, Biden over on ABC and Trump over on NBC.
How'd you do that? One left eye on one and right eye on another?
No, I DVR'd both of them and watched them at my leisure. But the point I'm trying to make is watching him trying to weasel his way out of knowing and liking QAnon reminded me of the guilty husband trying to explain to his angry wife how some other woman's panties got into the glove box of the family car. Am I alone in that take on this deal? I mean, he was, and Savannah, to her credit, she turned him every way but loose.
Hey, Scott, if it's the clip that I'm thinking that you're mentioning, I saw it this morning during my ABC like news brief.
Yeah.
He sounded to me like a slightly different analogy, like the 3-year-old got his hand caught in the cookie jar and he's fast talking his parents how he really wasn't trying to steal a cookie out of the cookie jar.
Yeah.
He was backtracking, then he was defending, and I'm like, dude, make up your mind. Honestly.
But the other side of that one is how can anybody who spends as much time watching TV not be aware of the Boogaloo Boys and QAnon, particularly with the channels he watches?
Yeah.
The Q people are in his rallies with the big signs.
Yeah, but I mean, Fox News, from what I've been told, because I never have it on my TV, but they've been harping on these folks for a long time. And he is a tremendous Fox News watcher. How could he not know about them?
Oh, he knows. Well, he's trying to do a plausible deniability, and it ain't working.
There's no plausible there.
Right.
Well,
not to us, no.
I mean, Ralph Cramden, homina, 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 he was making Ralph Cramden look forthcoming and articulate. The whole thing reeks of desperation and flop sweat at this point. Dude, you know
what I like this part about him when he's talking about his taxes?
Oh, God, yes.
And then he kept doing the old, and then she told him, well, you can release him. There's nothing in the law. And then she goes, well, who do you owe all the $400 million to? And he says, well, it's not that much money, blah, 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 blah. And then he
blurts out he's gonna tell her. I'll tell you later.
Yeah, of course.
And then Forbes magazine came up today and said it's not 400 million, it's closer to 1 billion. And there's a huge article with all kinds of charts and his admissions in his financial statements to the government and all his different properties in San Francisco and L.A. and, you know, all around the world. And it's closer to $1 billion, and most of it is coming due in the next 4 years.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
And then there's 450 pages of documents out of the Treasury Department on payments that have been made, Secret Service staying in his golf resorts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're only going to release 2 pages of them before the election.
Before the election.
Before they're only going to release 2 before the election.
And we're like a little over 2 weeks till the election.
Yeah, but there's like 450 pages of money that has been paid out by the U.S. Treasury to his properties during his time in office.
Good God.
Oh, and since we were talking about the Georgia Senate race earlier, as we sort of wind down here, a brief reminder that the guy who is running for re-election and is in, he's in jeopardy of being taken out by John Ossoff. Well, he, David Perdue, being the class act that he is, put out a campaign ad recently in which, in order to emphasize the Jewishness of John Ossoff, they photoshopped his nose bigger. No shit.
Good God.
And so, David Perdue showed up at a MAGAT rally in Georgia, doing the warm up for his God Emperor. And decided he now he served in the Senate of the United States with Kamala Harris for 3 years, and I guess he still doesn't know how to pronounce her name.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Here we go.
Here's
the audio.
And Kamala, or what? Kamala, or Kamala, 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 Kamala. I don't know. Whatever.
You got that? Let's try that again.
And Kamala, or what? Kamala, or Kamala, 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 Kamala. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah,
that was an asshole way.
I bet that gets big laughs down at the Clavern.
Probably.
Hey Bob, remember Bernstein?
Refresh my recollection.
Bernie Bernstein. That was the fake calls during the Roy Atola Moore campaign. The guy they were.
Oh yeah.
Or not Bernie Bernstein, it was Bernie Bernstein from New York. I'm from the New York Times. Same shit. Sorry,
well,
Scott.
Bob Pittles got up on hearings and said the election was November 11th. Did anybody miss that?
God.
Who was that?
Well, that's when Republicans are supposed to vote on November 11th.
Yeah.
Hey, Roger, I've actually thought about printing signs up and putting those around and putting stuff on Facebook and doing ads on Facebook about make sure you vote on November 11th and targeting at Republicans.
Well, that'd be great. But I did a little research this week over something I heard on Tom Hartman's program, and it had to do with the electoral college value of different states, and possibly a way to shift the whole paradigm is to take the entire federal budget, allocate it as per electoral college power, and give each state a bill based on their electoral college power. And then the states have to generate the money to send to the federal government to fund the federal government. Now, if we were to do that, the federal budget, I don't have that number in front of me right now. Oh, yeah. $9,260,168,240 this year. If we were to take California with its 55 electoral college votes, each person in the state would have to give up $12,500, which, you know, that's sort of like what people in California pay in income tax. But there are 723,237 people per electoral college vote. And then we dump down to Wyoming. Oh, by the way, California had 55 electoral college votes. We get down to Wyoming that has 3 electoral college votes. And their per capita share is $49,233.64, and each electoral vote represents 183,333 people. Now, if we were to shift the funding of the federal government and distribute it approximately toward the electoral college power of each jurisdiction, I think we would change immediately the entire paradigm discussing power in this country. I also have Texas, New York, Georgia, Oregon, West Virginia, and Vermont data if anybody wants to continue the conversation. But if you don't, that's fine too.
I want to know how much do I owe, Roger?
Oh, in West Virginia, you owe $25,030.97 per person.
Dear God, so that's almost the same as the average income of a West Virginian.
Yeah.
Well, but now that's for every man, woman, and child in the state.
Right. I'm talking adults.
I'm talking.
No. I get that. But that's gonna be a little tough to come up with when the average West Virginian makes about $30,000.
Well, then you better figure out how to live on $5,000 a year, just like people have had to learn on how to live on $1,200 for 6 months.
Roger, is there a link that describes this idea? Because I'd like to read up on that just for my own edification.
No, it was a caller into Tom Hartman like on Tuesday that suggested a way to switch things around, and I thought, what the hell, I'll play with it. And so I took the top states, California, Texas, and New York, Georgia is in there too, that have more than 10 electoral college votes, and then I picked up West Virginia with 5 because I know Bob lives there, and Vermont and Wyoming each have 3 electoral votes. But the interesting thing to me on that was that a lot of people, we can't get rid of the Electoral College because then the big states would be they would determine everything. Well, if they determine everything, then
that's where the people are.
If not determine everything, then maybe you want to pay your fair share based on the Electoral College power. But what really blew me away, that an Electoral College vote in Wyoming is 183,000 votes, and an electoral vote in California represents 723,000 people.
Yeah.
So how is this in any way, shape, or form a democracy when it comes to the Electoral College?
The essence of it is electoral votes are not weighted equally.
Not at all.
No.
Yeah.
Because everybody gets a senator by default, so every state has 2 electoral college votes that way. But because of how we apportion House membership, everybody gets at least 1. Hence,
that's one
North, South Dakota.
And I don't have it in front of me here, but in California, I would suspect that each congressional district has more voters than Wyoming.
Very likely. You get one. That's what I said. You get in the House, you get 1 by default. You get, yeah, you get,
because
it's,
Wyoming
it's like,
has
it's
only
like,
550,000 people.
It's like the SAT. SAT, you get a few points just for getting your name right. That's Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota. Yeah. Well, we are pretty much at the end of the program. That's fascinating, Roger. Thank you for that. Note coming in from Arnold in PA. My father and I dropped off our absentee ballots at the county courthouse today. Here's my nightly statement. I am disgusted, having now voted. All these people calling middle-of-the-road corporate Democrats the radical left can kiss my blind ass. That would be the vast majority of your multimillionaire for-profit media. Our turnpike system, because Arnold is in PA, and we were talking about the PA turnpike. Our turnpike system is owned by a company from Spain, I think. It's operated for profit, and it's not a public good, LOL. Not even a private good. I mean, it's good for the people. It's good for the corporation getting the money, but you can't make money by actually do an upkeep on the road now, can you? No. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Todd jumped in. Scott jumped in. That means we're down to 150 to finish the week, which makes the that puts us in a bit of a hole for Moran Monday. I'll cross my fingers. Maybe the overnight crew will take a bite out of it. Thanks, all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers, PayPal and Patreon. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you all so very much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you, Sparky, and the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves for Friday on the Front Porch. Remember, just because this program is ending doesn't mean the conversation is. Everybody will go around to the back for Sparky's back porch once this part of the program is over. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time at headon.live. The very best place to listen to the Malloy program in that slot. And thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. As the Midwest blazes with COVID-19, as cases increase all over the South and grows generally across the country, as we wait 18 more days for the close of the election cycle, stay home to the extent possible. Stay safe. If you have to be out and about, the standard warnings apply. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, sanitize surfaces, wash your hands, don't touch your face, carry hand sanitizer with you wherever you go. Maintain your social distance of 16, 20 feet if possible. It's kind of like the old joke you'd see in, or at least I'd see in the, I don't know if it's like this in the ladies' rooms, but in the men's rooms, some smart ass would write on the wall, "Please don't throw toothpicks in the toilet. Crabs can pole vault." Well, it's like that with cleaning surfaces. The little COVID bastards can practically fly. And by all means, if you see someone coming toward you and they're hollering, "Cleopatra was an African," avoid them like the plague, because they probably are. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend. Moran Monday will be here before we know it.